Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 16, Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya. Text 54. Sri Shuka Vacha. Itam Sanaga Patni Bhir. Bhagavan Samabhishtuta. Murchitam Bhagnashirasang. Visasar Jhangiri Kuttanai. Itam Sanaga Patni Bhir. Bhagavan Samubhishtuta. Murchitam Bhagnashirasang. Visasar Jhangiri Kuttanai. Itam Sanaga Patni Bhir. Bhagavan Samabhishtuta. Murchitam Bhagnashirasang. Visasar Jhangri Kuttanai. Sri Shuka Vacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said. Itam, in this way. Sa, he, Lord Krishna. Nagapatni bhi, by the wise of Kaliya. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Samabhishtuta, fully praised. Murchitam, who was unconscious. Bhagnashirasam, his head's crushed. Visasaja, he let go. Angrikuttanai, by the striking of his feet. Translation. Shukadev Goswami said, thus praised by the Nagapatnis, the Supreme Personality of Godhead released the serpent Kaliya, who had fallen unconscious, his heads battered by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. Purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna, upon reaching his decision, immediately jumped down from Kaliya's hoods and stood before the serpent and his wives. We should remember that when Lord Krishna executed these pastimes, he was just a young village boy in Vrindavan. Next text. Kaliya slowly regained his vital force and sensory functions. Then, breathing loudly and painfully, the poor serpent addressed Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in humble submission. The serpent said, our very birth as a snake has made us envious, ignorant, and constantly angry. Oh, my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature by which they identify with that which is unreal. Purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out that because of his wretched condition, Kaliya was unable to compose original prayers to the Lord, and thus he paraphrased some of the prayers offered by his wives. The word asagraha indicates that a conditioned soul seizes upon impermanent and impure things, such as his own body, the bodies of others, and other countless varieties of material sense objects. The ultimate result of such material attachment is frustration, disappointment, and anguish, a fact that has now become crystal clear to the poor serpent Kaliya. Om Agana Timidandasya Agananjana Shalapya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Kabuddhananda Sri Advaita Gadata Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliyanag, completed their surrender, as we discussed yesterday. They finished their prayers by saying, "Now please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear." Yesterday we discussed the position of being a maidservant for Lord Krishna. That means we're always waiting to execute Krishna's order. We're eager to execute that order. And we take that order as life itself. This maidservant attitude is so developed and intense at the highest level of the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. And you see that most strikingly in the example of Krishna's dearest consort, Srimati Radharani, who prays, "Krishna, if my unhappiness gives you happiness, then I won't call it my unhappiness anymore. I'll call it my happiness." You've never said that to anyone. If my unhappiness is your happiness, then it's not my unhappiness, it's my happiness. Have you ever told anyone that? No way. As soon as you're unhappy, you blame the other person. Better make me happy or the relationship is finished. In spite of all the apparent anguish that the gopis were going through in Vrindavan, feeling separation from Krishna, they never took their minds away from Krishna. They always remained in complete attachment to Krishna. So much so that, as we just quoted, Krishna's dearest devotee says, "If you're enjoying my unhappiness, then that is my happiness." And if you want anyone else, Krishna, if some other spiritual consort is more dear, or you want her instead of me, I'll personally go to that spiritual consort and fall at her feet and beg her, "Please go to Krishna." These activities of pure love, of course, have nothing to do with the material conception in the material world. They have nothing to do with matter, nothing to do with material bodies or material emotions. That's why we are forbidden to jump straight to Krishna Lila, especially these intimate pastimes, without developing sufficient understanding, because immediately we will implant our material conceptions. That's the natural tendency of the material mind. In Sanskrit, that tendency is called aropita, to impose your own conceptions on a situation. And that feels good. "Oh yeah, I know all about that. I've seen that before. I can relate to that." When someone's conversing and explaining themselves and something they've been through, doesn't it make you feel good that you can say, "Oh yeah, 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 I know all about that. Been there, done that. I recognize that for what it is." That's the natural tendency of the mind. But when we do that to Krishna Lila, then we're in bad shape. Therefore, we have 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam to prepare us for the intimate pastimes of the Lord. We spoke yesterday about Lord Chaitanya, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkalam, I am your eternal servant. I'm simply praying, pick me up from the ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms of your lotus feet. At the lotus feet of the Lord means devotional service. Whenever you hear the lotus feet of the Lord, think of service. Now, Shukadeva Goswami is telling us what Krishna will do upon the Nagapatnis completing their prayers. The wives have saved Kaliya because they're exalted devotees. Kaliya wouldn't listen to them before when they would preach to him about Krishna. Now he's come to his senses because Krishna has stomped on his head. You should really try to appreciate the condition Kaliya is in right now. As Shukadeva Goswami describes, he was unconscious. His heads were battered by the striking of the Lord's lotus feet. Now just try to think of an ordinary person dancing on your head. Jumping up and down and dancing. And every time you tried to lift your head to protest, the person would push your head down with his foot. This is what's going on. The Lord, who contains the whole universe in his abdomen, in his expansion as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, a lotus flower grows from the navel. And in that lotus flower are all the seeds of the planetary systems. That Lord who carries the universe in his abdomen, he's jumping up and down on the heads of Kaliya. You can try to understand how Kaliya feels after having profusely vomited poison and then blood, and now he's unconscious. All done by this little blue boy in Vrindavan. Next, Shukadeva Goswami describes how now that Krishna has jumped down from Kaliya's hoods and he's standing before Kaliya and his wives, Kaliya is slowly regaining his consciousness, his sensory functions, and he's breathing very loudly and painfully. I don't know if you've ever experienced when breathing becomes painful. Has anyone ever experienced that? You're sick? Yes, it's a horrible feeling, isn't it? You never want to repeat it again. Just to breathe. Something you take so much for granted. And it becomes so painful. Your breath is loud and agonized. So it's with this kind of voice that Kaliya will now address Lord Krishna. There'll be loud, painful breathing. He's totally physically smashed, but his attitude will be humble submission. What do we have to go through so that we're humbly submitted before the Lord? Krishna knows what it takes for each one of us. We're a little afraid of that, though. Krishna, purify me, but not just now. In the future, I'll be glad to accept purification. Do what you like with me, Lord, but not now. Let's try to postpone it as much as possible. Maybe when I'm old and gray and suffering invalidity and about to die, then you can do your purifying thing upon me. But now I'm still young. My senses are vibrant. Let me go through the material experiences. And then later, at the fag end of my life, you can purify me. Because then I'll have done all that I want to do, you see. In other words, I'll have wasted my youthful and adult years in foolishness. The fact is, if you do that, and if Krishna would let you do that, put everything off until your old age, you would lament so much. Oh, why did I waste my youth and adulthood just following my own program? What was the point of it? It was ultimately insignificant. It was ultimately so temporary. How could I have been so foolish? So Lord Krishna doesn't want you to lament like that. Therefore, He knows better than you what is best for you. So he arranges your program for purification now. Sometimes there's a bit of a tussle, though. You're saying purification later, and Krishna's saying purification now. It's not that you... Can I have a shutter? My shutter, please. It's not that you are an atheist, of course. Far from it. No. It's not that you are denying the existence of the Lord. It's just that there's an argument between you and Krishna about the schedule of the purification. Why become purified? Why go through that purificatory ordeal when you're young and handsome and pretty and everything should be going your way? Mm-hmm. Could be a young brahmachari, brahmacharini, or just married couple, and you know, there are things to do in this world. Why can't Krishna just save all his wonderful purification until you're about to die? Isn't that enough? Isn't death enough of a purification? But once again, Krishna cares for us more than we care for ourselves. This we have to really think about. How is it possible for someone to care for you more than you care for yourself? Maybe some of you have had that experience. That experience can be there in a perverted way in material relationships. Probably the best example is a mother and a child. The mother will readily give up her life for the child in the traditional sense. Nowadays, many mothers will readily kill the child in the womb to protect their career, to protect their convenience. But in a normal human society, mothers would easily give up their life to protect their children. Just like now, maybe it's ended by now, but there's a whole controversy going on about this boy who's to be executed in Singapore for drug dealing, an Australian boy. And did they finally execute him? Yes. So, in order to stir the sympathy of the Australians, they showed, the Australian press was showing a picture of his mother visiting him in prison in Singapore, and she couldn't even kiss him. There was a plate of glass in between, and the mother's young, but her hair is turning white out of anxiety. And they showed her face so forlorn. So the Australian press was saying, how can such pain be inflicted upon this mother? And then the Singapore leaders replied, what about the pain of all the families who would have bought that heroin and their children got addicted? What about that? Everyone knows the laws in Singapore. If you deal drugs, death penalty. It's no secret. Obviously, the young man in his 20s thought he was going to make a big profit in spite of the danger, and so was bringing heroin into the country. A drug that, no doubt about it, destroys your life and destroys countless families. So the Singapore government made their position clear. They told the Aussies, what are you moaning about? What are you whinging about? If this boy had completed his mission, how many families in Singapore would have been devastated? In other words, I guess they're not going to do this again. Someone will be, they'll realize the word will be out. We're serious. So, I could see in the mother's face, her attachment, her feelings, her hair's turning white, and she's just so young. I don't know if she felt she would die in the place of her son. I don't know. But the true motherly love for the child is the closest thing you'll get to self-sacrifice in this material world. We have to think deeply how it is that Krishna can care for us more than we care for ourselves. How could that be possible? We think, I know me, I care about me. All my life, countless births, I've been looking after me. You mean there's actually someone who cares for me more than I do? Mm-hmm. Everyone needs that experience when you come to Krishna consciousness to realize that someone cares for you more than you care for yourself. Mm-hmm. Actually, that feeling is the glue of the guru-disciple relationship. Sometimes people are afraid. Candidates in devotional service are afraid of accepting a guru because they think, oh, I'm going to be subject to a dictator. My decisions will be out of my hand. But when you get the experience that your spiritual master cares for you more than you care for yourself, that is an unforgettable experience. And then by the instructions of the guru, you get to see that Krishna cares about you and everyone more than you care for yourself. Krishna is the self of the self. We have to think about that when the Shastra says it. We know what it feels like to be a self, but Krishna is at the root of that. He's the self of the self. So his treatment of Kali, although it looks very heavy, it's the greatest mercy. And that's what the Nagapatnis pointed out. How did our husband get this good fortune? The Lord's lotus feet on his head. Kasyanu bhavo asya deva vidmahe. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, can't get the Lord's lotus feet dancing on her head. How did this serpent, who is by nature envious, cruel, disgusting mentality, yet the Lord is dancing on his head? Now, when Kaliya is speaking, finally, as Sanatan Goswami points out, he's going to paraphrase the prayers offered by his wives because he's so woozy, he's punch drunk, from the Lord dancing on his head, he can't offer a proper prayer. So he just quotes what his wives had said earlier to Krishna when they were pointing out, our husband has this lowly snake body, he's naturally envious, he's naturally cruel. So now Kali is repeating that. Once again, you see the value of having a good Krishna conscious wife. He's not able to get it together on his own to offer prayers to the Lord. So he, what did my wife say? Some or other get it together in Krishna consciousness. So he's describing his birth. Remember, he's breathing loudly and painfully. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that Kaliya, his body was so banged up that he couldn't bow down to offer obeisances and he couldn't get his hands together to offer pranams. That's how devastated he was by Krishna's dancing. So now he's praying, our very birth as a snake has made us envious, ignorant, and constantly angry. Oh, my Lord, it is so difficult for people to give up their conditioned nature by which they identify with that which is unreal. Now, many devotees will often say like this as an explanation for some wayward behavior or tendencies. Prabhus, it's very difficult to give up our conditioned nature. We all know how it is. We want to be Krishna conscious, but we have this nature. Well, Kaliya is saying like that. Actually, it is true. It is very difficult to give up conditioned nature by which you identify with that which is unreal. But it is possible if you strive by right means. Bhakti Yoga offers you the techniques for indeed doing that impossible thing, to give up your conditioned nature. In this verse, swabhava means one's material nature, not your eternal constitutional position. Very difficult for lokana, ordinary persons, to give up. But a devotee is not ordinary. Why is a devotee not ordinary? Because you're all by nature since birth brilliant and beautiful. You're all expert and talented with so much material prowess. No, a devotee is not ordinary because the devotee is not striving by ordinary means. That is the point. As soon as you adopt the extraordinary means, then you become extraordinary. Otherwise, you remain quite common. So our value is that we have adopted the superlative beings, the superlative methods. And this way, we're no longer in the ordinary category. Of course, if we neglect our treasures, then once again our conditioned nature will overcome us. And that is the greatest loss. What to do about that conditioned nature? Sometimes, you know, devotees think, is it really possible to be Krishna conscious? I've seen some older devotees, they have trouble. So, what do you want out of me? What about so-and-so? Oh, I read it on the internet. So-and-so, yeah, he was a devotee for 30 years and he did. So what do you expect out of me? What was his name? This goes on. There's an interesting section in the beginning of the, no, not the beginning, part of the 11th canto, where Lord Krishna is talking with Uddhava. And Uddhava raises this very point. Because Krishna is describing the effect of the modes of nature. That the modes of nature, Trigunamayi, are always in conflict. They're always changing in terms of who's on top. Sometimes in the world, the mode of goodness has an effect. Sometimes the mode of passion or ignorance having the predominant effect. That's what I mean. Constantly changing the modes are. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita. What does that mean? It means that although your body, each body has a predominant mode of nature, still, when the modes of the world change, you get influenced in a certain way. Someone whose body and lifestyle is mainly in the mode of goodness can be affected by passionate thoughts and very troubled. Oh, no. What to do? Someone who's passionate, predominantly body and rajagun, they can periodically think, maybe I should give it all up and just, you know, live a simple life. That's under the influence of the mode of goodness, even though their body itself is rajagun. And someone in the mode of ignorance, tamagun, although that's rare, they may start thinking, maybe I should go out and get a job. Rajagun. So, this is what's going on around you. You have to learn to see the world in terms of the fluctuation of the modes of nature. If you're fortunate, one day Krishna will let you see. When you go out on Sankirtan, suddenly you'll see everyone swimming in the modes of material nature. So Krishna tells Arjuna, Uddhava, that the modes are always fluctuating. Yet, if you can solidify your life in even the material mode of goodness, you have a chance to develop some sanity. But you have to be careful about the mode of goodness because it's not pure. There's taints of passion and ignorance, even in the mode of material goodness. Therefore, you have to quickly make your step to bhakti. The material mode of goodness is the best step on the stairs in order to reach bhakti yoga. But it's not complete in of itself without bhakti yoga. How do you fortify your position in the material mode of goodness? By choosing mode of goodness things, mode of goodness activities. Surround yourself with items, paraphernalia of the mode of goodness, and that'll fortify your position. But once again, ultimately, without devotional service, bhakti, the mode of goodness is not fruitful, and you can easily be pulled down. Uddhava heard all this, and then he posed to Krishna a very important question. Why is it that even a learned person who knows that material pursuits, mode of passion, leads to distress, still becomes overcome? Why? Such a learned person acts like an ass. Why would he say that? Acts like an ass? Because an animal, even though he's suffering, still tries to pursue his agenda. You can beat the animal, and still the animal is trying to hold on to whatever it's holding on to. Like the monkeys that will reach into a cage that's electrified just to get the banana. They're so attached to the banana, they'll calculate how much shock can I handle. I've got to have that banana. So similarly, as human beings, we also calculate, I think I can handle any distress that comes along with this, but I got to have it. I don't mind. I'll take the good that comes with the bad. Just let me have it. That's actually animal life. So Uddhava's inquiring. Learned persons, it seems, can fall victim to this. They know that their pursuit of sense gratification will lead to suffering, but they still do it. What's going on? How is it that they submit to this conditioned nature when they know? These are very important questions. And by thinking about these questions, we won't feel so unique in our contemplation. Is it possible to give up conditioned nature? Oh, it can't. What do you think, Prabhu? Can you rise above your conditioned nature? Nah. The other devotees told me it's not possible. Don't be a fanatic. Do whatever service you can in your spare time, and you know that's the best way. How did Krishna answer Uddhava's question? He said, first of all, the conditioned soul makes the mistake of identifying with the body and mind. And because he identifies with the body and mind, then the mode of passion invades the consciousness. Originally, consciousness is in the mode of goodness, but because of identifying with the body and mind, your consciousness becomes invaded by passion. It's all from identifying with the wrong thing. And then when the mode of passion invades your consciousness, you're filled with plans for constantly achieving things. And you're constantly changing these plans. You're making and changing plans over and over again. How I'm going to enjoy. How I'm going to be successful. How I'm going to be all right. This is the conditioned mentality. Non-stop. Let's do this. We'll be happy in this way. Oh, let's change that. Let's do that. We'll be happy in that way. Constantly making plans and changing them. That's the story of material existence. And because you're constantly making and changing plans for material enjoyment, then your mind is full of anxiety and anguish as a natural result. That's the reaction for material nature, for misusing your plan-making ability. Your plan-making ability should be used for planning Krishna's pleasure. But because we're using it to plan our own program, nature gives you that reaction. Take stress. And there's no stress management program that can cope with this until you solve the original problem. The original problem is misuse of your mind and intelligence. Misuse of your plan-making capacity. Then Krishna told Uddhava something very interesting. He said, sometimes even a learned person has their consciousness invaded by passion and ignorance. And when the consciousness of the learned person is invaded by passion and ignorance, that passion and ignorance forces him to do things which are against his self-interest. He's overpowered. As soon as you let the mad genie of the mind loose, you're forced to submit to it. Yes, my mind, what would you like? Take me wherever you want to take me. Then you're overwhelmed. And there's not much hope for your overcoming that wave of passion, unless, of course, you take shelter directly at Krishna's lotus feet. So, as an intermediate step, the Lord said, when that happens to a learned person, when his mind is invaded by passion and ignorance, he should carefully analyze the contamination, and in that way he won't be attached. When the contamination attacks you, and it seems like it's taking over your consciousness, these sizzlers that appear in your mind. Maya pulls something out from 10 years, 20 years ago in your life. Take a look at that. And your brain starts to sizzle. Ooh. And you start to shake, and that image seems to take over your mind, become a whole reality of itself, and it seems there's no way you're going to be able to fight that. So Krishna says, when that happens, analyze the contamination. What is this, really? What would be the result if I surrendered to this? What is the nature of this so-called pleasure? What does it end in? All right, suppose I actually succumb. There will be this, there will be that, there will be that, there will be that. Forget it. You see, the way Maya works, as I've explained before, she doesn't want you to think about the end result. You just look at the front end, not the back end. That's the way Maya attacks your mind. Just look at what's right in front of your eyes. It looks good, doesn't it? Grab it. Doesn't it look good? It looks good. Take it, it's yours! You think Maya tells you, take a look at it, it looks good, but what about all the pain and suffering that's going to come afterwards? Now, since when has Maya ever spoken like that? No, that's why it's Maya. Just take a look at how it looks superficially. Take a look at how it seems to be without going deeper into the matter. That's Maya. If you start thinking about what the consequences are, well, it looks good, but I don't know. What's really behind all this? And what's the true substance of this situation? What will it do to my life? What will it do to others' life? As soon as you start analyzing like this, then the contamination starts to recede. So Krishna recommends this intermediate step. He says, if you do this, you won't be attached. See, the big fear is that when passion and ignorance invades my consciousness, that means I'm attached. So I might as well just give up. If I wasn't attached, it wouldn't be there in my consciousness. Now, Krishna says, if you analyze these propositions of Maya, then there's no attachment. Because as soon as you start to analyze, you'll see clearly, this is a hallucination. This is a ripoff. Just like those of you who use email. I know this is a big internet temple. So, you get, someone sends you a suspicious looking email. I get them from time to time. I just got one a week ago. It was supposedly coming from a god brother, but it wasn't a Pam Ho address. It was some kind of, other address, composed of his name. And then the text of the message said, Maharaj, take a look at this letter. And attached was a Word file. So I said, wait a minute. This god brother never writes me like this. The subject of the email was just letter, the letter. And then the text of the email was, take a look, read this letter, Maharaj. So it was very suspicious. Then I contacted, Of course, I didn't open the letter. I knew this is either a virus, it's spyware, or something. And I contacted one computer devotee, and he told me this is the way that persons attack you with spyware. They want to implant something on your computer. So, we can deal with Maya's propositions in the same way. Oh, this looks suspicious. I wonder what this really is about. I'm not going to open it. Let me check with someone who knows. If Koti was there, I would have asked him, hey, what's this? But it's not that I opened it first and asked later. Well, I'll open it. If there's a problem, I'll get Koji to fix it. Best is not to open it and then ask, right? Well, that's how you deal with Maya. Don't open it. It looked attractive if you didn't know. If I, hey, Maharaj, open this up. So wait, it was supposedly coming from Godmother Madhu Savita Prabhu. He never writes like this. But the whole presentation was designed just to elicit an automatic response out of you. Maharaj, open this. Yeah, okay. That's the way Maya works. She designs her propositions to get a reflex action out of you. Yeah, just do this. Like the commercials say, just do it. Yeah, okay. The illusory energy doesn't want you to think about anything. But Krishna wants you to think about it. So Krishna says to Uddhava that very interesting point. When passion and ignorance attacks your mind, analyze it with intelligence and you won't be attached. The fact that you can analyze it means you're not attached. It protects you from attachment. And then Krishna gives the real solution beyond the intermediate step. He said, the real solution is to perform the yoga of attaching your mind to me, bhakti yoga. That's the real solution. Wrap up your mind so much in my service that you're safe. Now, Kaliya had the Lord's lotus feet dancing on his head. Therefore, in spite of his lowly conditioned nature as a snake, he had the greatest future, the greatest fortune. It is difficult to give up your conditioned nature, but if you have Krishna's lotus feet dancing on your head through devotional service, it is completely possible. So that is our quest as devotees. How to have enough immersion in Krishna's service that the modes of nature cannot drag us down. Therefore, you should never give up your devotional service. Even there can be difficulties. Sometimes between devotees there are problems, misunderstandings. As you get older in Krishna consciousness, you'll look back on it all as insignificant. You'll see that the real treasure was I didn't give up my service. And that clinging to your service means clinging to Krishna's lotus feet. All right, any questions?
You were speaking about overcoming our conditioned nature. How much discipline should we put into overcoming our conditioned nature versus just engaging, trying to push on with our service? Is there a secret?
Pushing on with your service means overcoming your conditioned nature. That service, especially the chanting of the holy name, makes it possible to overcome your conditioned nature. Otherwise, it's not possible. Then we also have our various ashrams. Ashram means a station, a position of purification. If you follow your ashram properly, no matter what ashram it is, you'll become purified. Householders who properly follow the grihastha ashram become very strong. That was Prabhupada's hope, that by properly following the grihastha ashram, strong devotees would arise. Let's speak of any other ashram, brahmachari ashram, sannyas ashram. They're all means for consolidating your strength, handling your conditioned nature. In a constructive way. Anything else? Yes. Yes, but they were beautiful. Bhakti. Kali is overcoming now also. He's just going to accept Krishna's order. Just like his wife said. Give him an order, we'll all accept it. Yes.
Just one comment about careful reading that. It said, terrible condition, I have seen a few patients.
Mm-hmm.
Constrictive pericarditis, inflammation of the lining of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
The heart can't expand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very weak, and the patient is just going to die there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is the double pneumonia, pleurisy.
Mm-hmm.
Chest cannot expand.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient is just suffocated.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you do something, give them oxygen.
Very
terrible.
This is the condition Kaliya was in. At the same time, his spiritual situation was glorious. It was a condition brought about by Krishna. Therefore, his wives were not blaming Krishna. Why did you do this to our husband? We became your devotees and now look what happened. No, they're thanking Krishna. How did our husband get this fortune that you're dancing on his head? This is the proper way to view our purification in Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.